Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I want to tell you a story about something that happened to me and my husband about 30 years ago. I'm 73 right now. It happened to me when I was in my 40s. At the time, we were bass fishermen and we fished in many amateur tournaments. On this particular day, we fished in a tournament on Lake O' the Pines in East Texas. We won a prize and our best friends happened to come up there at the weigh-in, and they said hi to us and everything. They said, "Why don't you give us the fish and come over to our house after you drop your boat off and eat dinner with us?" She said, "I'll cook it and you won't have to." So they look at their watch and they said, "Well, you'll be at our house at about 5 o'clock, so it'll be ready." And so they knew where we lived and how long it took, as many trips as we made back and forth. So they were correct about the time. We went home and dropped the boat off, changed clothes real quick, fed the dogs, got back in the car, and headed to their house. Our friends lived about 45 minutes away from us around Lake Merval around Carthage, Texas. So we were headed there, and we got about 5 miles into our trip, and the last thing that I remember was stopping at a red light in this little town about 9 miles from our house. Then, the next thing that I remember was crossing the bridge at Lake Merval, turning down a little road where my friends lived and driving up into their driveway. When we arrive, they come running out all of a sudden. "Where in the world have you all been? My God, the fish is cold. We were so worried about you." We said, "Well, we came straight here." And they said, "You couldn't have." I said, "We did." She said, "You had to have stopped somewhere. Do you know what time it is?" I said, "No, I left my watch at the house." She said, "It's 6:30. Shocked, I sat back for a minute. I looked at my husband and he looked at me. We didn't say anything for about a minute, and then he, a non-believer in anything paranormal, popped up and said, "You know, folks, I think we may have been abducted by aliens. I don't know what to think. I've wondered every day of my life ever since it happened. If they did something to me, put something in me, what else could it have been? Had an encounter a couple of years ago where I was in the woods near a river that has never had any man-made development when my machete disappeared. Moments later, it appeared next to me, back in its sheath, as if from nowhere. So I went on a hike at this nature preserve, and when I reached the end, I was at this river. It was a peaceful spot, but not the most amazing spot I have ever seen or anything like that. I went to leave back towards my car, and after about a quarter of a mile, I hear what I thought was like a girl giggling. I assumed some people must have been coming down the river on a boat or something. When I looked over my shoulder, I noticed that my machete was gone, but the sheath was still firmly in my backpack. I figured I must have dropped it when I stopped, so I turned around and went back. I looked all over the place and no sign of my lost machete. I figured this place seemed like a good spot to set up a trail cam. There was a lily pond pretty close to the river where I thought wildlife would come to drink. As I walked to the side of the trail, the sheath of the machete suddenly falls to the ground and I leave it there, grumbling under my breath that I must have lost the machete earlier on in the trail and just didn't notice. I remove my backpack and kneel down to get the trail cam out. I think I hear someone giggle again, and I stand up with the camera to go put it on a nearby tree and stop in my tracks, because as I go to turn around I notice that my machete is back in its sheath and is sitting right next to my pack. Now I had left the sheath on the ground several feet away when it fell out, and I had no idea where the machete itself was, and now it was suddenly back. I'm like 2 or 3 miles away from my car. I look around and see nothing and no one. I squat back down and start putting my camera away as I feel myself about to freak out, and I don't know, I just got a grip somehow, calmly put my pack back on, and then walked back over by the riverbank where it was wide open. I did not grab the machete, I left it where it was. I felt like there was no way a person had snuck up on me like that, and I never heard nor saw anything other than that weird giggling. I figured if something could do all of that without me being none the wiser, then I definitely couldn't fight it. So I sparked up a cigarette and then said, "Thank you for not taking my head off. I respect the forest, and I'm not here to mess anything up. I'm going to leave now." And then I grabbed the machete and walked out of there, feeling like it would disappear again. I held it in my hand the whole way back. I still don't know what the hell happened. I've been back several times, and every time I go now, there is some kind of animal there. One time it was a glimpse of the biggest buck I have ever seen. Another time it was a bunch of raccoons running around in broad daylight, and they were not concerned with my presence at all. Anyone have any idea what I encountered? I've tried to research, but can't find anything that sounds like what I experienced. Sitting by the crackling fire, surrounded by the hushed sounds of nature, I listened intently to Moki's tales. Each word he spoke seemed to weave a tapestry of mystery and adventure, and as he recounted his experiences along the Sicken River, I found myself transported back to a long-forgotten chapter of my own life. It was the summer of 1985 when my dear friend John and I decided to escape the mundane routine of our lives for a fishing trip along the Sicken River. The mere mention of that river conjured memories of tranquility and beauty, a slice of paradise tucked away from the cares of the world. That yearning for the outdoors for adventure had led us to that fateful journey. As we cast our lines into the clear waters, the sun painted the sky with hues of gold and orange. The rimrock caves and overhangs above us seemed like ancient sentinels, casting coal-black shadows upon the rugged terrain. The air was alive with the songs of birds, and I felt a sense of euphoria that can only come from being surrounded by nature's embrace. Yet it was beneath those very caves that our adventure would take an unexpected turn. The tranquility shattered as grunting noises echoed from above. The grunts were guttural, primal, like the kind of sounds a wild pig might make. "Browump." Browump John and I exchanged startled glances, the camaraderie we had built over years of friendship communicating our shared unease. What creature could be making those noises from within the darkness above? The unease quickly gave way to a creeping sense of dread, and we began to edge away from the immediate vicinity of the caves. Our fishing poles felt suddenly insignificant, and an ominous atmosphere settled over us like a heavy shroud. Just as we were beginning to put some distance between ourselves and the source of the unnerving sounds, the air was split by a high-pitched whistle scream, a sound that seemed to defy the very laws of nature. Our hearts pounded in our chests, and we turned to look back at the cave in disbelief. And there it was, a sight that both thrilled and terrified us. Emerging from the cave's darkness, a creature of immense proportions came into view. Its form, covered in fur and moving with an uncanny agility, defied all rational explanation. In those heart-pounding moments, all thoughts of fishing were forgotten. The creature, with its enigmatic silhouette, crossed the rugged terrain with an eerie gracefulness, its steps deliberate and purposeful. And then, as suddenly as it had appeared, it disappeared over the top of a ravine. John and I stood there, still as statues, our minds struggling to process the encounter we had just experienced. The years have passed, but that memory remains etched in my mind. Moki's stories brought it all rushing back, as if the passage of time were a mere illusion. The tales of the Sicken River hold within them a magic that transcends the mundane. As I looked into the dancing flames, I couldn't help but smile. Roy Caddy's stories, Moki's tales, and my own memories were now interwoven, creating a narrative that would continue to captivate and inspire long after the fire had burnt out. I reside in North Dakota and I work third shift. I go to many different locations and clean. One of the locations I go to has like deers and bunnies. I've encountered deer before and I know to keep my distance. Towards the end of my shift, which is around 4 a.m. to 5 a.m., my coworker and I are in charge of taking out the trash. Next to this location is like a field with trees next to a park. In this area, it's always foggy in the morning. It's close to a river. We begin to bring the trash to the back of the building where the dumpsters are. I was next to the dumpster ready to lift my huge bag of trash, but something just told me to look. I turn to my right and across the street is a very tall, extremely skinny deer with huge antlers. While I stared at it, I couldn't stop thinking, what's wrong with its knees? Its knees were just so huge compared to the thin leg bones. This deer was extremely tall, and it began to walk towards my coworker and I. Its leg were so long, and it wasn't moving correctly. The legs were just too long. Then another one appeared next to the first one. Due to the fog, they looked gray, not cream or brown. But this gray color, their eyes were glowing, and they just stared at us. I no longer wanted to look at these things, but my body kept telling me to look. I was afraid they were going to charge and attack us. I turned to run and my coworker was already running towards the door. They did not make any sound. These deer were extremely quiet. Something just wasn't right with these deers. They gave me an uncanny feeling. These deers were well over 6 feet tall. Good evening, fellow enthusiasts. Let me start by validating my credibility first. I've been monitoring the crypt side for a good 15 years now, have a degree in zoology, and a master's focusing specifically on herpetology study of reptiles and amphibians for the newcomer. This academic background has greatly contributed to my pursuit of the known and the unknown. What I'm about to share is a living testament to my adventures in the dark corners of our world. And before I roll the dice on this, know that this is not some drunken tall tale. During the event, I was unadulteratedly sober, senses sharpened by the austere seaside chill. Yesterday I had a harrowing encounter, the likes of which I've never encountered in my generous stretch of experiences facing the elusive Nag's Head beach creature. The moon was in complete authority, stars stubbornly shrouded behind the thick shroud of clouds. As the tide surreptitiously slid in, I saw, or rather sensed something, a mere flicker at the corner of my vision, something that required peripheral acknowledgement. a fleeting shadow, a passing chill, an abrupt indent in reality. This being the Nag's Head beach creature, much like many obscure curiosities we study, appreciates the solitude of night. Nocturnal engagements are its preferred encounters, lingering in the periphery, solidifying its ghostly essence. A mystery etched in the sands of Nag's Head, always visible from the sides, yet vanishing to thin air the moment direct contact is attempted. Illusory, you might say. But not when you've heard it the sound that threads chills through your spine. The creature in its movements spoke a peculiar language, an alien-like slithering rustle, a chicka-chicka, if you will. An uncanny sound clawing up your consciousness, it was akin to the whispers of nighttime wind through desolate dunes, or the uneasy scuttle of a crustacean against washed-up seashells, a serpentine orchestra only the nocturne listens to. Now, about its tracking signature footprints you wouldn't expect. They were digital, formed of an enigmatic static that pulsed before disappearing into the soothing waves. Ghostly lit specters on the sand left behind by its passing, as if the beach obliquely hummed with the static discharge of this creature. A modern mystery misaligned from anything we perceive as typical. And God forbid, should you strive to photograph this elusive entity, for it would defy the said attempt in an uncannily digital way again, rendering itself only a 3-pixel smudge in any photo. An undefined form, yet mysteriously defined by its defiant resistance to be perceived. After the encounter, my mind whirled with theories and speculations. This creature's nature, its ethereal presence, and its disembodied essence felt otherworldly. Pondering my experience, the possible explanation that eventually crystallized was dubiously paranormal. I believe that what I encountered was not a creature bound to the 3 dimensions we live in. It might be our first contact with a creature of the 4th dimension. The digital footprints, the confounding 3-pixel apparition, and the ephemeral perceptibility all lead to an elusive creature that exists in a higher order of spatial existence, only partially interfacing with our 3-dimensional space-time reality. A being transparent to us, living a parallel life wrapped in the splintering silence of the Nag's Head night. This is our world, the Crypt Side. A melting pot of varied realities, countless oddities, and incomprehensible encounters. This was my encounter with the elusive Nag's Head beach creature, an experience that tipped my skeptically academic life to a pondering, fear-churning paranoia. But isn't that why we're here? To chase the unknown and expose the veiled truths? Because, in the end, isn't that the very soul of cryptozoology? Stay curious, stay brave, and keep your mind open. Not sure if this is the ideal place for this story, but I'll go for it anyway. In the late 90s, I went on a Yowie hunt with a group of cryptozoologists in the Blue Mountains just west of Sydney, Australia. The Yowie is the Australian version of Bigfoot, Yeti, etc. I was just an undergrad anthropology student who had stumbled across this group online, ended up corresponding with the organizer, and decided to tag along. I'm a skeptic by nature and kind of wanted to see whether these guys were just crackpots. For anyone who's not been there, it's very mountainous terrain covered in thick bush, just a maze of canyons, ridges, cliffs, creeks, waterfalls, etc. A few of the places we went are only accessibly by foot. Absolutely spectacular, though. Anyway, we spent about 3 days up there. There was a Canadian film crew from the Discovery Channel there as well, making a documentary about these crypto guys. I haven't seen the documentary, but I'm told my car is in the background of most shots. Anyway, in the time I was up there, I saw some weird shit. A tree about as thick as my thigh that had been woven between other trees, like lattice. I still have a photo somewhere. Not broken, just woven. A giant footprint in some sand. I wear size 12 boots, Australian sizes, and my foot fit comfortably within it. There was one guy who was kind of hosting the cryptos, claiming he saw the Yowie all the time and had even been leaving food out for it. He claimed that he had set a sound-activated tape recorder under the food bowl one day. The tape contained some footsteps, some rustling, obvious chewing of food, and then more rustling as the covering layers are obviously removed from the recorder, and a massive bang. He claimed he found the food bucket smashed to pieces after this. Pretty well everyone in this guy's road claimed to have seen this thing as well. One lady claimed it even came into her house and stole some baby clothes. What the hell does a yaoi want with baby clothes? The only guy who wouldn't say he'd seen it had just bulldozed a 30-meter perimeter around his house. This is in thick bush turned into scorched earth stuff. Put bars on all the ground floor windows and installed to my count 22 motion-activated floodlights around his house. The place was a fortress. He was right at the end of the road, closest to the bush. Several people told us that the NSW police had just finished a stakeout in the area looking for something after a number of people had phoned in terrified sightings. Always wondered if there is some form of UFOI process I could go through to confirm this. After the first night, a tree near where we were staying had been demolished. I mean, absolutely smashed. This tree was one of those ones that forks out into a double trunk, just above the ground. One half of it was just torn to shreds, and it was a thick tree. Just huge scraps of wood everywhere. It had been okay the day before, the other trunk was untouched. One night out in the mountains, I was walking back to my car a few hundred meters from the campsite by myself. I'm a skeptic, remember. Nothing to be afraid of. Suddenly everything goes quiet. I mean, crickets stop chirping kind of thing. The most irrational terror came over me. I could barely walk and was shaking terribly. I stumbled to my car, got in and got the F out of there. I was supposed to go back to the campsite, but every instinct was just screaming at me to get away. Never been that scared. When I told the guy who was hosting us up there, he said he had a similar reaction when he had seen the yaoi and had shit himself in terror. Big chunks taken out of trees everywhere. Hundreds. The locals called them tree bites. The story is the yaoi listens for grubs under the bark and finding them. Bites a huge chunk of wood out to get them. These things were sometimes 2-3 meters off the ground, and each had two parallel gouges along the edges that could conceivably have been big canine teeth. One night camping on a ridge, in the middle of the night we hear a crash in the bush below us, enough to wake several us, then a thump 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 like an elephant running, all the while with crashing like a bulldozer was going through the bush. In the morning, there is this path of destruction just torn through the bush in a straight line. Small trees broken, bushes flattened. Imagine taking a 1-meter-wide bulldozer and just roaring through thick bushland. I should say I've heard kangaroos crashing through the bush before, and tree kangaroos dropping down from high perches. They kind of just smash through the foliage on their way down, and this was different. Anyway, that's my story, make of it what you will. I'm still a skeptic, and I don't believe in yaois, but a lot of this stuff still freaks me out even now because I can't find good rational explanations. I've also heard numerous yaoi stories since. My story became creepy after the hike, not so much during. It was a mild December day in New England, and my then-girlfriend and I decided to do a short evening hike at a local state park. An easy trail up to this old stone tower structure. We brought a little weed with us and hung out on top for quite a bit until it started to get dark. We smoked a bit, talked, and enjoyed the views. The tower overlooks the trail heading up to it, and as we were up there, we noticed someone walking up the trail to the tower. It was a man dressed in black, just casually making his way up. Now me, being a teenager at the time and a little stoned, glanced to see the man coming to the tower and quickly packed up my stash for discretion. We decided to just start our hike back as it was near dark anyways. But as we make our way down each of the 3 or 4 levels of the tower, we realize we don't see the man. The stone structure is large but open and with many windows, so I kind of look around curiously just to see who had hiked up. No sign of him, and no sign of him around or on the trail either. You can see a good distance in every direction leaving the tower, certainly enough to see someone a few seconds after they turned around to leave. He had left somehow. It confused me, but I was also kind of stoned, so we paid no mind to where he went really and just made our way back to the car. Now where it gets creepy is that few months later, I found out that my experience was not unique. I discovered that there were similar stories about a ghostly legend of the state park. I was really interested in the paranormal at the time, and while researching local ghost stories online, I found the story of the man dressed in black. He is sometimes seen near dark walking up to the stone tower, and some claim that if you keep your eyes on him long enough, he'll just disappear. I was flooded with chills when I read about it, and I'm just glad that ghost didn't cross my mind when I saw him. This is my experience dealing with a dogman while working as a forced service employee. This is something we're not really supposed to be mentioning, but I'm sure you hear that a lot. But I'm going to go ahead and remain nameless for the sake of this email. I hope you don't mind where to start. Really well, when I first joined, I had not really known of or dealt with a dogman ever. I had heard it in passing through other rangers, but easily dismissed it as a legend of the Midwest, like Bigfoot is to the Pacific Northwest. This is until one evening a couple of years in, I would have my own terrifying standoff with one of these things, and let me tell you, they are far more terrifying than you could ever imagine. I don't recommend going out looking for them. They mean trouble. Fortunately for me, I'm already dealing with a career choice that lets me smack dab in the center of the woodlands where these things are supposed to be living. Yeah, me. So my first encounter with these things was not out in the deep woods.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's like most people would expect, but rather on a popular trail that leads along the coast of one of our larger lakes. I was alone, something which I no longer do. I always travel with a partner. The sun had just dropped below the tree line. There would only be about a half hour left until darkness had set in completely. I wanted to ensure that all hikers and bikers were accounted for and home safe before then. I'd probably get my second wind when the sun went down and could keep going for another hour too, but you know how these things go. While cruising through this particular stretch of trail, I saw movement up ahead and under a canopy of overgrown ferns. Now I wasn't really expecting to see anybody for at least another hour and hadn't seen a soul, so this was an eyebrow raiser. I stopped and crept up on it slowly, carefully, my hand resting on my rifle. As soon as I got close enough, I realized what the movement had been, a mountain lion. But then I looked closer, and this thing was too big to be a mountain lion. But whatever it was digging into a fresh deer carcass, ripping through the meat. I could hear the flesh tearing, and so I shone my light on it and ordered it to leave. When I realized this was by no means a mountain lion, this was some sort of really large, freakish-looking dog. Things escalated quite quickly as this creature let out a guttural growl. It sounded like nothing you'd expect from a big old kitty. My heart skipped a beat, and I slowly made my way backwards, trying to radio for help on my walkie-talkie. But of course, there was only static. It was dead silent out there, except for that little growl coming from somewhere behind me. It was beginning to get dark out, and I can't really say for certain, but as I made my way faster back towards the main trail, I could have sworn that Big Kitty's eyes glowed a deep red in my flashlight. Even though it wasn't a kitty, it was some crazy dog or something, but I'm just going to refer to it as a giant kitty for the sake of my sanity. My palms were sweaty, my knees all wobbly, when I finally made it back to the main recreation area where the rest of the campers had gathered for an outdoor movie. I must have looked like a ghost because everybody was staring at me with real concerned looks on their faces. Nobody wanted to believe me, what I'd seen, but there was that deer carcass, which was almost certainly the mountain lion's kill, right where I'd found it earlier, confirmed by two other rangers who went out there to take care of it after they got my distress call. They said they found large canine tracks all around there. I could hardly sleep that night, thinking just about how close I came to being dinner for one of those things. I've had a few other close calls too and weird stuff, but I'll save it all for another time. Right now, I just want to sleep and forget about that thing out in the deep woods. I and my fiancé are both in our car headed to 7-Eleven to get the usual prerequisites that the morning requires. Caffeine, donut, etc. We pull into the parking lot and park in front of the store. We are about to get out when we look at the car next to us. The driver is normal enough, your average-looking 20-something Caucasian female, but sitting next to her was something quite odd. It was a male, Caucasian, glasses that looked, for the most part, like everyone else, except for one major difference. He had short goat-like horns coming out of his head. The horns were gray and fat at the base and got thinner as they got farther from the base. It looked like a baby goat, maybe, just nubs, but still obviously horn-like protrusions. We quickly turn our heads to verify with each other if we saw the same thing. A moment later, instead of a horned man sitting there, I see a large collie dog mix. The woman driving, mind you, seems oblivious to all of this and is doing her makeup in her visor mirror. Baffled, we simply pull back out, go home, and take the day off of work. We spent the day napping, and in between naps trying to figure out what we had seen. Either way, it was nuts. The middle of Kansas City, busy parking lot, and we see this very odd thing that everyone around us is obviously unable to pick up on. I don't know if it's a shapeshifter or an entity living in her dog. My lady and I were able to see it, or if it was an all-out fae-like modern pan type using glamour to hide his true nature. It was at the 7-Eleven on Gillum RD near Gates BBQ. The human horned being was wearing eyeglasses, brown hair, and gray little horns. He looked to be in his early to mid-20s. He was just sitting there looking ahead, watching people go by. The dog was black with a German Shepherd or Collie-like marking above the eyes. It was wearing a bandana and was also staring straight ahead. I want to tell you about the time I saw an unexplained figure, and it was really scary. It was the summer of 2018. We live in Brooklyn, New York. It was around 7 p.m., so there was plenty of light. My brother and I were walking home from this Mexican restaurant that we used to go to, and we were cutting through an alleyway on our way home. We saw this human-like figure to our right. It was in a tree, and we were both like, WTF. It was really weird. So we just kept talking, and it jumped out of the tree and landed right at the base of the tree. Then it straightened up. It was about 6 feet tall. It was pure black. It looked more like a really tall, thin human, but it had a canine-like face. It was terrifying. And it had these curled horns like a goat. It also had really long fingers. It was kind of hunched over, but I could just like feel it look into my soul. I honestly don't know what it was. I have for the longest time thought that it could have been a demon, but it gets scarier from there. So my brother and I both see it and we lock our eyes on the ground. We don't want to make eye contact with it. So we start walking away a little bit faster, and we are talking about whatever we could talk about to not even acknowledge it. So we turned the corner and right in front of us was this building that had a tin roof, and we could hear it land on the top of the roof. We could hear it turning the corner of the roof with us. We looked at each other and we both just started running all the way home. I don't put a lot of merit into religious things personally, but I always thought that that could have been a demon. I took my kids on a camping trip, once not alone in the woods, at a campground, but our site was surrounded by woods. After they fell asleep one night, I tossed and turned for a while, and then decided to walk my dog to the end of the lane and sit on the bench in the children's playground. I was just enjoying the late summer air, and my normally very calm lab was starting this very low growl. She kept it up despite my shushing her and kept staring into the playground. There was an old metal swing set with four swings, and all of a sudden, just one of the swings started swinging by itself. Initially, I thought wind might be stirring it, and I sort of froze just watching it pick up speed while my dog erupted into barking. I bolted back to the tent and did my best not to wake my kids, but I just could not calm down. I've never told them what happened. Sometimes I go on late night walks with my partner, like 2 or 3 a.m. It's a route that we often take during the day as well, and by this particular point we'd done the walk a few times. It's a paved road through a park, so it's not particularly hazardous. Sometimes we've heard coyotes in the distance, but that was never a big deal. I like to listen to the frogs and other night noises. Reminds me of where I grew up. But this one night, we decided to go out when it was way, way too dark. Overcast, very little moon. A dark night. Part of the road is covered by trees, so it was even darker. We're walking slowly just for safety. We talk while we walk, and I always figure that's good enough for most wild beasts. And if a random stoner or whoever happens to be out there, they'll also hear us coming and not get spooked. But right as we start to come out of the trees into the clearing, she catches a glimpse of movement off to the side of the road. She grabs my arm and asks, "What's that?" And I'm like, "I don't think it's anything," but then I see it too. I'm trying to keep it cool because I know that if it's an animal, just being calm and speaking clearly usually will send them off, but I'm starting to pick up her fear. As I walk closer, I made some kind of comment like, "There's definitely something," and then, "I think it might be a person." And she screams, "It's not a person," or something along those lines. I whipped out my cell phone and flipped on the light, and it was a chrome Mylar balloon somebody had tied to the railing just blowing in the breeze. I don't think I've ever been so scared over an inanimate object in my life. We used our flashlights for the rest of the walk home. We've never gone night walking without a clear sky again. This incident happened at approximately 3 a.m. on the morning of June 7, 2012. For some reason, I can remember everything like it just happened. This was not a dream or a nightmare. I woke up to the sound of a child laughing. I rolled over to see where the sound was coming from. I saw the boy running back and forth beside my bed. I felt like something had control of my body. I couldn't move. My first instinct was to yell, but when I tried, nothing would come out. At this point, I then realized how bright my room was. It wasn't like sunlight, but it was so bright my whole room was light. I looked to my window, and that's when I saw the large gray alien out my window. Now, what's weird is my window is on the second floor of the house, so it must have been able to hold on somehow or levitate. I don't know if it was supposed to let me see it, because when we made eye contact, it seemed to teleport away. The only way I can describe the teleportation is that it went from a solid being to a static kaleidoscope type image and then vanished. At that point, I was able to move again. I remember going to the window, and that's when I saw about six more of the tall alien gray types slipping back into the woods. But it was so bright, and at that point, I could tell the light source was coming from directly above my house. I then remember the boy grabbing my hand and pulling me towards my bedroom door. I remember not really being able to fight back. I was in a zombie state of mind. When I reached the top of my stairs just outside my room, there was a woman sitting at the top of the steps. For some reason, I didn't feel afraid anymore. She wore a pink hooded sweatshirt and gray sweatpants, and she told me not to be afraid, that we had met before, and that the boy was ours, but he lived with them, the Grays. From there, all I remember was the three of us walking out of the house, and then everything went blank. I will add that this is not my only experience with abduction. The reason why I know this really happened is that I remember telling my sister and brother-in-law this story, and they both looked at each other in shock. They told me how my brother-in-law's mother, who is my neighbor across the street, woke up randomly one night and said that outside was so bright, brighter than the daylight, were her words. It was coming from over my house, but she never went to the window because she was too scared. That was over 10 years ago. I have not seen my hybrid son since. This story is from a friend's grandfather. He told us that around 1970 or so, he was on a boat sailing around Alaska. They were a crew of photographers or journalists or something like that. Anyway, at some point it got late, so they decided they should dock. The ship stopped suddenly, with the docks visible 3-4 kilometers away. The ship's captain, actually a friend and teammate, passed out flat on his back. Anyway, they tried to wake him up. But then the light started to fade, as if the power generator was giving out. It was near when the captain started to find his senses, where they heard a massive noise, like a whale's wailing, but it was like it filled the whole area. They creeped the F out, but calmly they fixed everything and set sail for the docks. The last weird thing happening was them seeing the waves foaming from massive herd of prowfish. I think they were swimming violently in the direction of the ship. After they settled in the room they were staying, they asked the captain what happened. But the only thing he could explain is that he felt funny and his ears buzzed and lost his senses. It all starts on a winter night in Juneau, Alaska. About 4 years back, while I was a senior in high school, a few friends of mine were over at my house. A neighborhood on the side of a mountain surrounded by a forest. We were bored with our video games and TV, so we all decided to walk a trail in the woods. This is about 3 a.m., and we weren't worried about running into bears because it was their hibernation time. So we gear up for the 0-degree weather and leave for a trail up the mountain that I had played at as a kid, running through the woods and building forts. So, of course, growing up in it, knowing it like my own home, I wasn't too worried. We had crossed a bridge onto the trail and walked about a half mile when my friend stops and says he heard something up ahead. I say that it's most likely a deer or something, having seen much of Alaska's wildlife in these woods. So we keep walking, and by this point, he's a little nervous, glancing around a lot. My third friend started to say it was probably the Kushtaka, a local legend of a creature that shapeshifts into something that lures you to your death. He freaks out even more, and I tell him I've spent half my life in these woods and haven't seen one thing that was remotely strange. About 5 minutes later, we heard snow crunch under a huge pine tree about 10 yards in front of us. We stopped dead in our tracks, looking up the path towards the tree. I shine the flashlight in that direction, and we catch a flash of something move behind the tree, almost like a bike reflector or something. We start walking slowly away from the tree, back down the trail, not looking away from the tree. Then we see a hand from behind the tree touch the ground, and I stop dead, frozen with fear, not looking away with my flashlight directly on it. It took a few seconds for my friends to realize what I was looking at. Then they saw it too. My friend, who had been scared this whole time, goes nuts and starts putting together words that made no sense. Whatever was behind the trees leaned out to look at us. Its eyes reflected like a dog's from the beam of my flashlight, making its face blurry from the glare. Instantly, we all run, not daring to stop. No movement was heard until we had reached the bridge, when one of my friends fell on the ice. That's when I heard it bounding up the path towards us. I shine my light, and there it is running towards us on all fours, half screaming, half howling. It looks almost like a human, but seemed to be a lot taller and skinnier, very pale in the moonlight and against the snow. It was completely naked. So I run and jump off the low bridge onto the frozen creek and yell for them to follow me. We run down the side of the creek towards my neighborhood. I have never run so fast and so far, but I kept on for fear of what I saw. During the entire run, I could hear whatever it was running through the woods directly to the right of us, all the way until we got to the street light by a children's park. To this day, my friend and I still bring up crazy theories of what we had seen. My other friend, the one who had been so terrified, had never brought it up again. Just for context, I live in a small village in Ireland. It's surrounded by fields and some small forests. Where I live, there is about 1 kilometer of empty fields before a mini forest. But keep in mind the ditch behind my house has trees just tall enough to block my vision of the fields. Every night at random times, usually 11 p.m., 2 a.m., I hear a man screaming out beyond the ditch behind my house. It's always at irregular intervals, and my neighbors are all elderly, so I know it isn't them. And there are no houses close enough for the sound to come from them. I don't know how to explain the scream, but it sounds less like it's from fear and more so from like annoyance, yet like it's aimed at someone. But it's slurred. I don't know how to explain the slur, except it's like when you're saying A, but when you scream, there is just something off about it. It doesn't sound human, but it also doesn't sound non-human. I have heard stories where a cryptid can imitate human pleas to bait people towards them. Could this be it, or is it just a crazy man who for some reason screams in fields in the middle of the night? Hey, so I was talking to my friend who said he went camping one time in an area that was known to be a little bit strange somewhere in one of the canyons in Utah. He was by himself and in the morning woke up because he heard a sound, and when he opened his eyes he saw this twig, branch moving back and forth and back and forth as if deliberately. He watched it for a minute and eventually he said he saw a creature start to walk away from it. He said he didn't see a head, but described it kind of like a cow, black and white pattern, but its back was draped in brown, and the butt resembled more of a horse. He swears it wasn't a cow, and that he wasn't high, and says he believes it's something more cryptic. It was probably a cow, to be honest, but I was wondering if anyone has seen or heard of something like this. The night was thick with darkness and the misty tendrils of fog as my partner, and I pulled up to the gates of Blackwood Mansion. Officer James Reynolds, that's me. Known for my cool-headed demeanor and rational mindset, I had always approached my work with a healthy dose of skepticism. But on this night, a creeping unease stirred within me like a whisper of uncertainty. The call had come in as a routine disturbance at the once opulent estate that now stood as a derelict relic of its former glory. A typical domestic dispute, I thought. Yet, as we stepped out of the patrol car, an eerie silence enveloped us, settling over the mansion like a heavy shroud. The air itself seemed to hold its breath, crackling with an intangible tension. My partner and I exchanged glances, our flashlights cutting through the darkness as we cautiously approached the entrance. The mansion's grandeur had faded, replaced by decay and neglect. We entered, our footsteps echoing off the walls that had borne witness to years of secrets and stories. Inside, the only source of light was our flashlights, casting long and wavering shadows that danced along the walls. The rooms were cavernous and empty, each step a reminder of the mansion's fading splendor. As we moved through the corridors, faint whispers seemed to caress our ears, carried by the wind that had found its way inside. The very walls seemed to hold the echoes of the mansion's past, a chorus of voices long gone. Our search led us to a room that seemed colder than the rest, a chill that seeped into my bones. I dismissed it as a trick of my imagination until my eyes fell upon a trail of damp footprints leading to the window. It was as if someone had stepped inside from the rainy night, leaving their presence behind. My partner and I exchanged a look, our skepticism waning as the inexplicable grew more pronounced. As we continued our investigation, we discovered a collection of letters and journal entries scattered around the room. The writings painted a tragic love story, a romance torn asunder by societal expectations and hidden secrets. My heart ached as I read the words, feeling a connection to the emotions of those who had penned them. Yet there was something more, something I couldn't quite put my finger on. The mansion seemed to pulse with a hidden energy, as if the memories of those who had lived there still lingered, trapped within the walls. As the night wore on, my partner and I decided to wrap up our investigation. But just as we were about to leave, a soft, mournful melody echoed through the mansion's corridors. It was the haunting sound of a piano emanating from a distant room. Intrigued and unsettled, we followed the sound, our flashlights cutting through the darkness. The melody guided us to a room, and as we entered, the music abruptly ceased, leaving us in an eerie silence. It was then that I felt it a presence, a weight in the room with us. My heart raced as I turned toward a full-length mirror, and what I saw within its reflective surface froze my blood. There she stood, a woman in an old-fashioned gown, her face hidden in the shadows. Her eyes met mine in the mirror, and a chilling smile crept across her lips. My breath caught in my throat as I watched her, rooted to the spot as if in a trance. And then, in the blink of an eye, she vanished into thin air, leaving only the echo of her haunting presence behind. Stunned and disoriented, I stumbled back, struggling to process what I had just witnessed. My partner and I left the mansion, our skepticism shattered by the encounter that defied all explanation. Back at the precinct, we delved into the history of Blackwood Mansion, unearthing a tale of tragic love, betrayal, and a mysterious disappearance that had cast a shadow over the mansion for generations. As the pieces of the puzzle fell into place, I couldn't shake the feeling that the mansion itself had become a vessel for the memories of the past. My rational mind had been tested and found wanting in the face of the inexplicable. The encounter had shattered the boundaries of my skepticism, leaving me forever changed and haunted by the memory of the woman in the mirror.